Hey, it's David Meltzer. Right now, Sue Bird is sitting in the NBC studios calling WNBA games in primetime. She, you know, is a Hall of Famer, and she owns a piece of the Seattle Storm. And she's the one picking the roster for the 2028 Olympics in Los Angeles. But when I sat down with her in 2019, none of that even existed. She was a point guard, fighting for a league most networks won't even touch. And in this conversation, she laid out exactly what the WNBA was asking for and exactly what it would become. Listen to what she says about equal pay, not NBA money, the same share. And remember, she said this before any of it even happened. She called it every bit of it. Here's Sue Bird.
This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs the Playbook, and I'm so excited because I have actually one of my idols, believe it or not, because I'm Jewish and any nice. Great Jewish athlete.
Yeah, you represent.
So Sue Bird, one of the greatest, if not greatest, point guards from the WNBA, and one of the few people that have Olympic gold medals, NCAA championships, as well as WNBA championships, which is not easy. So there's no doubt that you carry a spirit of excellence. We come from similar backgrounds, like the great Italian, Russian, Jewish background. How did that drive you to be successful, having what I assume was a lot of driven parents who probably, yeah. Your dad's a doctor, I think.
Yep.
And then there's probably some guilt in there.
Always, right?
How'd that all work out for you?
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's one of those things where you probably don't realize it till later in life, how lucky you are. Because in the moment, it feels kind of like annoying or like you're being nagged. But I was really lucky to have two parents who, my dad, like you said, my dad was a doctor. My mom was a nurse.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how they met. Kind of a classic story. My mom actually, they have different backgrounds. My dad, he grew up in Brooklyn, like had great education his whole life, went to Brown, like, you know, did his whole thing. My mom, her scenario was more, she grew up on Long Island. They didn't have like a ton of money. She has a couple more siblings. My dad has one sister. My mom has like 3 to 4. One of them was a half. It's a long story. But she really had to like put herself through college. So, but at the end of the day, they both got to where they got with obviously a ton of hard work. And I actually have an older sister as well. She's
right.
5 years older.
Which is why you guys were number 10, because you're both born in October, right?
Yeah.
I'm a numbers guy, so I love that story.
Yeah. And my sister was really driven. So it's like while my parents 100% set, you know, high standards, expectations. It was my sister that kind of was the first one to like really drive that home. And I just was always trying to copy her. Because 5 years is like this interesting gap.
Yeah.
It's like we were not close growing up. But yet for me, I always looked up to her. We didn't become close later, till later. I was definitely the annoying little sister. but yeah, our parents were always on us, you know, couldn't do anything till you finished your homework, you know, checking our grades and all that stuff.
And did you grow up in the city?
No, I'm from Long Island.
From Long Island.
Yeah.
And, you know, back then a lot of people don't realize, you know, you guys both played sports, you and your mm-hmm. sister.
Yep.
But, you know, to come from that area and be probably the best high school basketball player, and you actually switched high schools, which is rare at that time for, you know, a woman to switch high school for sports.
I know.
You know, and then, you know, you have like all these anomalies about, because I grew up so Jewish. My brother's a rabbi. My mom was the principal of a Jewish school, right? Like, really pressed.
Yeah.
And like for me, I'm just
imagining. I transferred to a Catholic school.
Right, you transferred to a Catholic school to play basketball.
Yeah.
Like, I have 6 kids in my family. I went to college to play football.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, looking at me, you can imagine the long, long list of colleges that wanted me to play football.
Yeah.
So my mom, I grew up with a single mom,
okay.
freaked out, right? Because education was everything.
Right.
So as I looked at you, I'm like, I wonder what it's like going home and just telling your parents I really want to play at this high school that's, you know, this Christian.
No,
home.
So this is actually kind of funny. So the short of it is that like a bunch of different things were happening at the same time. My parents were splitting up. So that was happening.
Yeah.
And then, so that kind of is what, like, led us to my dad getting an apartment in Queens. But Queens obviously wasn't, like, some random destination. Like,
right.
That's where Christ the King was. That's where I was going to go. But I was also, I had been playing for this AAU team in the summers. AAU's, like, everything.
Yeah.
And so.
I'm a pump brother guy. And,
yeah, okay.
You know, AAU for years.
All right, cool. So, yeah, so you know then, like, and that's, so that's the team I was with every summer. So, and all those girls went to Christ the King. It was basically like a Christ the King kind of sort of affiliated team.
Yeah.
So I already had this like built-in like friendship group and understanding of what was going on there. The coaches were the same, so there was that. And then the other thing was that I went to Syosset High School, so did my sister, and she played basketball. And basically, like, not to get in the whole song and dance of it, my dad, who's like very into basketball, like honestly, I don't even think it matters that I play it. He's right. He's into it regardless. Women's basketball. It's not even about me. He's like all about it. But he just, in defense of like some of the girls on my team, he didn't feel like the coach was doing a great job. He just felt like she was treating them like unfairly, not even to me, really.
Yeah.
And so it just, the whole thing just kind of played out where he was the one that was like, okay, I think we should go to Christ the King. I was okay with it because I wanted to do it, but also like I had my friends. I was cool. Now I was going to have these like two friendship groups,
right.
You know, Syosset where I'm from, and then Christ the King. It was perfect. So for me, it didn't matter. But it was actually my dad. So it wasn't me. Like, I didn't knock on the door like, hey, I want to do this.
Okay, cool.
My dad was actually one of the ones that was like, I think this is best for you and your basketball career.
And then going to college, you know, like rejecting Stanford to me, it's they've.
You sound. I'm going to talk about my dad a lot here. You sound like my dad.
Yeah, well, I figure because
I'm crazy.
I thought I was crazy. All my siblings went to the Ivy Leagues, Harvard, okay. Penn,
yeah.
Columbia.
My dad and my sister.
And they thought I was. I got accepted to one Ivy League school, no money,
right?
Obviously, mm-hmm. And I wanted to play football, and I found this Division III small school, Occidental, where Obama went. All right,
yeah.
But they let me play.
Right.
Like the coach literally said, "You're going to play here." And I was like, okay,
I
was crazy. And although I would have went to Stanford and not played football because that was my dream school, they rejected me for undergrad, for law school. Now I speak there. That's the way I always start my speeches.
I know, I was going to say,
I'm like,
it's a good
look,
entry.
Exactly, you guys are teaching me now. You rejected me, but that's the way it turns around. But we do. We take on our parents' advice, even though just because someone loves you doesn't mean they give you good advice. Now, fast forward. One of the best basketball careers next to Larry Bird, Sue Bird, that's where we see him. The great careers, right? And but it's interesting because you had a lot of individual accolades, although I watched you play from the time you were at UConn, and you're one of the greatest, like Magic Johnson, mm-hmm. team players of all time.
Yeah.
Was there a conflict with your teammates and your own self about like, wow, I want to give my teammates the, because you played for one of the greatest basketball teams of all time. I think you lost 4 games in 4 years, which is really, really hard to do in basketball.
Yeah, we did all right.
So how did you deal with that side of it?
I think the way I play is just what comes natural. It's not something I ever set out to do. I mean, I have like vivid memories of some of my early coaches, AAU coaches actually, being like, Sue, please shoot. Please, we're begging
like
you
LeBron
shoot.
Like LeBron early in his career.
Yeah, like literally. And I would almost like get in trouble for not being selfish. It was just, I think just by nature, that's how the game came to me or that's how I found it. So as I got older, you have to try and find a balance because you know, you kind of discover if you're not doing the things that can be viewed selfish when they're, you know, the right time to do them. If you're not shooting when you're supposed to, if you're not being aggressive, that kind of thing. You're actually, in some bizarre way, it's like full circle, you are being selfish because you're not doing what you can to help the team. So there is a balance there. And then once you find it, which for me probably came, I mean, like as I went, it like got better and better. But like starting in high school, college for sure, and then onto the pros, it was like that was just who I was. It was never an issue. I never had a problem with, you know, teammates or anything like that. It was just like, I'm the point guard. I'm going to run the team.
Yeah.
Hopefully, I'm doing my job in such a way that I can actually yell at you and you're okay with it because you understand it's coming from a good place. And that's kind of how I approach it.
And, you know, you're an obvious perfectionist, but moreover, I believe there's a spirit of excellence that mm-hmm. certain people, and I've seen it in baseball, football, basketball, hockey, they get onto a team and it's not an accident that you win a lot.
Right, yeah.
You know, it's not, there's something about winning. What is your philosophy about winning?
Philosophy about winning?
Because some people tell me, for example, because it's a little obscure question, you know, I look at winning as I just hate to lose more than anything else. That's why I win. Is there some philosophy or motivation for winning for you or some feeling that you have?
That I have, I mean, it's definitely true that the feeling, so this is what's interesting about winning, right? You know, it's this long journey. It's like a full season. It's all these practices. And at times you can kind of get lost. But that moment at the end, okay, it's like, it's unlike anything else. It really is. When you're, you know, just to give you like an image, when you're actually like hoisting the trophy, that moment, like on the podium, you've just done it. There's literally nothing like it. The high of it, the sense of accomplishment, the sense of satisfaction, and then hopefully the party that follows after. Like those 24 hours, like that moment, followed by those, like maybe not even 24 hours. You can't, there's nothing like it. And I don't care what you do, you cannot replicate it. Like, I'm sure there's other things in life, like, you know, maybe having a child, those kind of things. I get it. There's things in life, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of how maybe I felt like when I was, I don't know, 5 on Christmas morning. Like, there are things. But as it pertains to sports and winning, like, there is nothing like it. And I mentioned those 24 hours because it's funny, like, this past summer our team won. And I already knew going in because I had experienced it. But, you know, that night when you party with your team, you try to recreate it the next night because you're excited. And for us, we flew back to Seattle. And, like, you have a good time, but it's never like that first night. And so I bring this all up to say, for me, I got addicted to that one feeling. Hmm. And it only lasts, like,
right.
not a very long time. And then all of a sudden, you got to do it all over again.
It's sports crack.
But, yeah.
Except you have to work.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And then with that, I found that you get also addicted to, like, the actual process of it. And I know people like throw that around a lot, so it's kind of, but it's true. It's like you fall in love with the day-to-day of it.
Yeah, and that's, I think, what sports gave me, mm-hmm. is because I knew kind of going into college, I wasn't gonna be a Sue Bird or a Warren Moon.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it was, I just enjoyed the whole process. I would be so bummed when the season ended.
Yeah.
And, you know, the championship, because we were good for Division III, mm-hmm. that feeling's great, but for me, that helped me most in life because I learned to kind of enjoy the consistent everyday,
yeah.
persistent without quit,
the
pursuit of my potential.
Game, you know,
yeah,
you're
my
like, wait,
potential.
Why am I doing this on a Tuesday?
Yeah.
And you're like, because just this little bit is going to help you on Wednesday and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely fall in love with it.
Now, you know, all athletes live 2 deaths.
Mm-hmm. So they say.
Right. And, you know, you transitioned out of playing a long time into what we call the business world. And what was the biggest challenge for you of that transition when you went from, gosh, I can't play anymore?
Yeah, well, I'm still playing.
I'm still playing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, so you're playing. You're working for the Nuggets and still playing for the Storm.
Yep.
Wow, I didn't.
Yeah.
This is perfect. Oh, forget it then.
Don't put me in the death yet.
So let me switch the question.
No, it's actually, I can already answer. Yeah, yeah. So what's unique about a women's basketball player is that the WNBA season is fairly short. It's only in the summer. And most of us do go to Europe in the off season. And so while you are playing year-round, which is like, you know, on your body not so great, but from like a financial standpoint, it's awesome. You know, you get to make money, you get to do all these things.
It's like a real job.
Yeah. But what happened for me was that a couple years ago, not necessarily just for like basketball purposes, I decided to stop playing overseas. There's like a bunch of reasons.
Yeah.
And what that did was open up my off-season. So now I have this perfect world of like, I'm not retired, I'm still playing, I'm still working out every day, I'm still trying to like get to that goal, but I do have like 6 legitimate months to like figure out what I want to do and what I want to be when I grow up,
right.
you know? And in that process, it's been like 4 years now, 4 off seasons. I've tried some commentating, which I've enjoyed. You know, I invest in restaurants and things like that. So that's more, that part of it is actually just more luck. It's a friend of mine who wanted to do it.
Yeah.
I believed in him and it worked out. But of course, there's some other business stuff that I get involved in. And then now this Denver Nuggets position opened up. So to answer your question, I think what I'm still trying to do until I'm done playing is in these moments, in these months, just seeing like, all right, where, like, I like all the things I'm doing. But what am I like, what do I love? What am I like passionate about? What would I do for free, you know?
Right.
And then, oh, if they pay you, great. But like, that's kind of, because I feel like as an athlete, that sport comes to you so naturally and you're young and it's all you know. Like, it's all I know is to like love basketball, be a part of it. It's easy, you know, like even the days that I wake up and I'm like, oh my God, I don't want to work out. I still do it because somewhere inside, like I know what, you know, like I know
you always
what
feel better when you work out anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
I know the minute it's over, I'm like,
oh. You feel even twice as good about like, I'm so glad I did that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So just trying to like find something. I know nothing will ever be like basketball. It's mm-hmm. impossible. It's
that's great that
impossible.
You know that because I coach coach a lot of athletes,
yeah.
and I try to set expectations. Going, look, you've been through an extraordinary circumstance,
yeah, extraordinary.
And you could take Michael Jordan, mm-hmm. who is extremely Magic Johnson is probably the most successful entrepreneur that I know as
yeah.
far as that type
like
of career,
yeah.
and he'll even tell you that yeah, all the successes, playing. The announcing, the movies, whatever he's done, yeah. it's not like when he hoisted the trophy and played right. for the Lakers or even Michigan State. I think right. everybody varies. Or, you know, for my business partner, Warren Moon, winning the MVP of the Rose Bowl mm-hmm. still sticks in his mind, even though he yeah. played until he was 44, right? Because that was his championship, which is extraordinary. Now, you know, finding yourself is interesting, competitive athlete. We have a big change in the world, and you were on the cover of ESPN, the body magazine, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, I just hugely impressed the people that can inspire other people to be themselves.
Yeah.
How was making that decision to kind of come out and tell people what your personal choices are mm-hmm. of your lifestyle and what you believe in? What was that? Was that a bigger challenge than anything else?
No. So I definitely did it later than yeah. like a lot of people. And that was just kind of how it happened for me. For years, I'd venture to say close to like 15 years. It was like pretty much everyone in my life that I like.
Come
and, yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't like an unknown thing.
Right.
Like,
right.
Even
right.
like.
And I see that in sports a lot.
Yeah.
Like,
in the circles you like.
Have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like run in or whatever. I don't know. Like
yeah.
everyone knew it wasn't. But like there is a difference. I get it. As like somebody who is in the public eye, there is a difference between that and saying it publicly. I kind of
right.
thought
or even
that.
Promoting it, right, on the
yeah,
cover
promoting.
Of a magazine.
Because yeah. yeah.
that's the way, that's the choice that I thought is, you know, people knew, mm-hmm. like in the sports world.
Right.
But, you know, now you get to make a stand for something you believe in so
yeah.
that hopefully, because, I mean, kids commit suicide when they're not mm-hmm. clear on who they are. And
absolutely.
Like, and I work a lot in that space to try to help people. Sorry, I get choked up, but,
yeah.
you know, being who they are. So when someone like you that I look up to as an athlete, you know, goes ahead and promotes the fact that, hey, this is cool.
Yeah.
It's okay to be you, no matter what you believe in, list
right.
it out, but it's good to be you. Like I tell people, find your frequency. And I think my favorite thing about social media, because mm-hmm. I'm kind of the old man on Instagram,
yeah.
I have this huge following now, and it's really cool.
yeah.
But I like joke around and go, the coolest thing is I always wanted everyone to love me. So there's all these things that I wouldn't tell people, because
right.
I want everyone to love me and approve me.
Yeah.
And I'm older than you, but I got to a point where there's like 4 billion people on the internet. What if 1 million people love me and I liberated them to be themselves,
yeah.
but 3.999 million, you know, billion people
yeah.
didn't know me or didn't like me? That'd be fine.
Right.
Right?
yeah,
but I had it reversed. I wanted the 3.9 billion
yeah.
to love me and let 1 million not like me.
Right.
And that's completely wrong.
Yeah.
Have you seen any of that frequency, that retribution as far as people going, thank you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that was something I wasn't necessarily, I didn't do it for that reason.
Right.
Because obviously you have to do it for yourself and like, in terms of frequency, like you're finding your own, right?
Yeah.
So, but that was like a, for lack of a better word, byproduct that was, I don't know, just very touching and like made it, it was already worth it, you know, but it made it like that much more worth it. It allowed me to find my voice in a different way, expand my voice in a different way. And I'm just kind of realizing, I think this is one of those things where, again, I brought up the 15-year thing to say like, I was living like, my genuine real
self.
Life. I wasn't hiding, but there is something about just being who you are, about being genuine, about, you know, like no apologies that people are drawn to. And I think with that, it's like people know when you're being fake anyways.
They feel it.
Yeah, they feel it. And they just don't want to be around you. And it's like, forget like liking or not liking. It's just not fun to be around someone who comes across. This is going to sound maybe harsh, I don't know, but like almost like hollow.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, who wants to have a conversation with someone when you're not getting anything back? So I think the more genuine, the more real you are about who you are, you're going to find that people are drawn to that. It's easier to just be in your own skin. And there's like a level of confidence that comes with that that I didn't expect either. It's another nice little byproduct.
Right.
Like I walk around now and I'm like, everybody knows everything, so who cares? Like,
right.
It's great. It's
well,
nice.
I try to teach that sincerity and vulnerability mm-hmm. actually create, to me, invulnerability.
Yeah.
Because you like,
yeah, you're like,
I have nothing, right, exactly. I illuminate everything and this is who I am and, you know, please love
right.
me for who I am.
Yeah, in terms of like being gay, especially as a female athlete, I think another aspect of it is, you know, when you're not saying it or maybe you're acting shady or whatever you're
yeah.
doing, you're trying to hide it, it's like all that does is actually create more whispers. It
right.
creates more talk about you, which is what you're trying to avoid.
Well, you resist, persist.
Yeah, right? And it's like, it's what you're trying to avoid because you don't want people talking about what you're doing, but it's actually just creating an even more.
You
and then the
it.
Minute you don't do that, It's like, it's
and then nobody cares.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they're like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's your girlfriend? Oh, okay, fine. Yeah, and then cool. They're bored. They're like, it's like literally.
There's nothing good there.
Yeah, but it was before. It's like, oh, we saw them out. What were they doing?
You know? Yeah, yeah.
It's so bizarre, but it's like that's you nip so it funny. In the bud, you move on, and it's just life is better.
I think that's the best lesson, right,
yeah.
of what it is. Last question. You've done so much at such a young age. Mm-hmm. Do you think about legacy? And if so, what do you want your legacy to be?
I've only recently started to think about it because, like, retirement is definitely knocking. Like, if I can squeeze out a couple more years, great. And if not, I am, like, satisfied, I guess, with what I have accomplished. So I'm okay either way. So I'm in a really good spot. And I think because of that, I've started to think about legacy a little bit more. And, yeah, like, of course, I want to be known, and I'm thankful that I will be known as a winner. Right? Because that's the one thing that you can't argue. You can argue, I mean, nowadays, what are we talking about? Greatest of all time. Michael, LeBron, Kobe, Kareem, Will. It's like, and you can argue, but what always trumps it? Oh, Jordan has 6 championships. So it's like, for me, I feel like you might bring up another point guard or another player or someone from a different generation, and you'd be like, oh, points, rebounds, this, that. But you can't argue those trophies.
Right.
So that's
in the end, every single athlete knows they play for that trophy.
Yeah, absolutely.
They don't play for assists, points, score, right?
No.
Nobody cares.
No.
That's why Tom Brady is who Tom Brady is.
And so, like, it's like you can't argue it. So that I already feel good about. And then I've kind of found this other aspect of, like, my legacy. And it's really as it pertains to the Seattle Storm. And we found ourselves in, like, a little bit of a rebuild the last couple years. Got super lucky, got back-to-back number one picks, so that sped the rebuild up. like, the end of the story is that we won this past year, so it's been great. But the last couple years were hard because we had some ups and downs, and we didn't make the playoffs, obviously, to get those picks and, you know, so on and so forth. And what I found in the last, mostly, like, the last 2-3 years is, wow, I have a chance to groom these young kids and to leave this franchise, you know, in great hands and have it continue to grow. Because when I got there, it was myself and Lauren Jackson were like the 2 number one picks and was kind of our franchise. The franchise is only like 3 years old. It's obviously one of the more successful ones in the WNBA, but it was kind of still a baby. And I feel like I helped grow that baby a little bit. And now I want that, you know, that teenager to be, you know, given off to somebody who's going to take care of it and help it grow even more. So I find that I can build my legacy in that as well. And that is where, I don't know, these last couple years have been probably, in some ways, arguably, just as rewarding as winning. Not quite that feeling, but just as rewarding.
Close enough. Well, I really appreciate it. I have 3 daughters that are teenagers, and my favorite thing about doing this is the research part, especially with women entrepreneurs, where I can point out people that they may not know about, or at least the story,
right.
And then engage with my teenagers in an authentic way,
right.
And get their feelings where they're like, oh my God, can I, you know, can I come? You know, yeah. And they're like,
they
come. Right, it's really cool.
That
so
cool.
I'm with somebody really cool, and I am so impressed. Sue Bird, thank you so much for coming on The Playbook.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs, The Playbook.